Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. As this year closes out, I thought it'd be a perfect time for a goodbyes-themed episode of the show. The radio stories that draw me in the most center around the experiences and the heartaches people have when they have no choice but to say goodbye. Goodbyes to people they love, to objects they cherish, or to places that have defined their lives. In the Bay Area, a location continually shaped by centuries of boom and busts of resources, money, technology, culture, and let's not forget the earthquakes, we've become a place where saying goodbye to buildings and institutions is pretty common. It's part of what it means to live here. But it doesn't mean our hearts don't break nonetheless. In June 2015, a place that meant, well, means still, a whole lot to me, the Lexington, closed its doors to the San Francisco community. The building still remains, but the faces, the stories, and one of the best-stocked jukeboxes in the city can't be found inside any longer. From KALW's very own Cross Currents, Christina Loring goes on a journey to find out just what would be lost when the Lexington shuts its doors to the public for the final time.
The first time I came to the Lex was back in 2009. I'd just moved to the Bay Area from Portland, Maine. I was 24, super femme, and I didn't have any queer friends here. I went to the Lex on a mission, like so many baby queers before me, looking for the mysterious lesbians of San Francisco that I hoped would be my kin, or at least make out with me. Same old story.
You know, some queer gets off the bus. It's like, where do I go? The Lexington, okay.
That's Blair Craig. She's been coming to the Lexington since it opened in 1997.
And then you sort of sit there and look around and eventually you talk to somebody and eventually you find your people. And I think that's what's important about the Lexington and what was important about the Lexington.
What was important about it was having a place that would always be there, a queer space that was always open. And tonight, that outpost is about to be gone.
It's heartbreaking on a lot of levels because it's not just, oh, this amazing queer space that was a safe place for a lot of people, regardless of sexuality, that's gone.
That's longtime patron Jennifer Chachna.
But it's a sign of the way that money is changing San Francisco and the way that the neighborhoods are changing, so it covers a lot of grounds of being a bummer.
The Lexington is like a national park. Like, you're glad that it exists, but maybe you don't visit all the time, but you appreciate that it's there.
Gabby Miller jokes she hasn't been to the Lex in years, but she's here tonight to pay her respects. That's because tonight's kind of like a wake. One of the loudest, sweatiest, most crowded wakes I've ever been to. A fitting swan song for a place that's more like a person than a bar.
If the Lexington was a person, it would just be the warmest, cuddliest, most accepting person ever.
They would be genderqueer. They would be wearing a lot of black, leather, some leather, tattoos, sexy.
They would be an old chiseled butch like me.
A little wild, a little feisty, comforting, and a beast that cannot be tamed.
I mean, it's amazing. It's people accepting you for exactly who you are with no caveats, no buts. When you come out and you get to be like, come the full you to everybody. I mean, I was lucky to have a family that accepted me, but a lot of people don't, and these people are, they accept you.
That's the thing that separates the Lex from any old dive bar.
You're surrounded by different people all day long. Sometimes you just want to be around people you know and, you know, people that are like you. And, you know, there's no really place you can go like that, you know?
That's Randy Turner. We're standing outside under the neon pink and blue letters of the Lexington sign. Clusters of women mingle on the sidewalk, chain smoking and crying. It's 10 p.m., 4 hours till last call. 4 more hours till the doors close for good.
I mean, it sucks. I mean, there really is nowhere to go. I mean, I think I've seen a lot of comments of people saying, well, we don't need these kind of spaces. It's like, well, you kind of do.
It's a question being debated between shots of alcohol tonight. Do we still need lesbian bars in the queer mecca of San Francisco? things are different now than they were when the Lex opened her doors back in 1997.
The mission was really different. When we opened, it was largely a Latino neighborhood, but also a huge neighborhood for dykes and lesbians and queers, and also artists and musicians.
Lila Thurkild is the owner of the Lex.
A lot of lesbian-owned businesses, and that's just where everybody kind of lived and hung out, so it was the natural place to open the bar.
Thurkild wanted to create a gathering place that would always be there, a staple, a beacon, a living room for queers.
We never closed over the holidays because even though we would lose money every year on that, it was so important to have a space that was always there for people that couldn't go home or felt like they needed that surrogate family. And even if it was just one person that came in, we would stay open because we felt like that was really, really important.
But after nearly two decades of keeping the doors open, no matter the cost, the landlord doubled the rent. The Lex couldn't afford to be in the mission, and neither could her patrons.
The key thing is that when those things start to happen, who do you see that happen to first? Well, the minorities, and the minorities within those minorities, you know? It's not surprising that the places that are already on the margins and have to struggle to be there to begin with are the places you see dropping off first.
While the effects of gentrification and the displacement of queer culture have dominated a lot of the headlines about the Lex's closing, Thurkild thinks some people are missing another very important point.
A lot of people like to talk about the closing and the climate and why it closed, and I think that's all important, but I think it's also really important to talk about, well, why was it open for so long?
One clue is in the slogan. It started out as your friendly neighborhood dyke bar, and then changed to your friendly neighborhood queer bar. As the trans movement grew up in the bar, its clientele diversified, and the Lex welcomed the change. It's nearly 1:30 a.m. Last call looms. People cool their sweaty bodies with a few last sips of whiskey. Lila Thurkild cues a very important song on the jukebox. We Belong by Pat Benatar. It's become the Lex's unofficial anthem, an anthem with a message. Although the Lex is closing, queer identity in San Francisco is here to stay.
We're going to miss you dearly, Lexington. Very, very dearly.
Thank you for letting me become me.
We'll miss you, Lex. We love you.
And that's it. Last call. As people spill out into the street, I can't help but think of it as a large metaphor. These doors are closing, but the essence of the Lex is dispersing beyond her walls. Her evolution of identity almost mirrors my own. I'm not that self-conscious baby queer I was when I first came to town. I'm almost 30. I've found my homo family. My girlfriend and I are shacking up in Bernal Heights next month. I finally realized that there's no one way to be queer. And since there isn't one queer space, I'm making my own wherever I go. For CrossCurrents, I'm Christina Loring.
That story originally aired in June 2015 here on KALW's CrossCurrents as part of our Sonic Sound Hunt Audiograph. You can find more episodes from Audiograph at kalw.org, and you can receive new episodes of CrossCurrents directly onto your smartphone or your desktop from their podcast feed in iTunes. You're tuned to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best stories from indie radio producers and podcasts. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Like I mentioned, I'm a sucker for radio stories of goodbyes and their ensuing heartaches. Hearing someone in their own voice tell some of the most notable experiences in their lives is always powerful and definitely intimate. And Though this next story is quite short, the emotions and intimacy still run strong. Radio producer Andrea Salenzi brings us this short piece she created with her grandmother Phyllis, who retells a story of making the most of your time with the people you love before it's too late.
I said, "This is nuts." And he agreed. I said, "This is really nuts." And he agreed. But we're going to do it anyhow, aren't we? I remember a bitterly cold, blizzard. And the radio and the TV were broadcasting the fact that all roads were closed. They could not keep up with the snow. But on this cold, bitter night, we were determined we were going to the opera in New York City. Gil had a almost fatal heart attack, Thanksgiving of 1978. And the first real venture out of the house was to be a trip to the opera. Gil said, "We are going." We knew that he would not survive another heart attack. We had him wrapped up in mufflers, and we had quilts in the car, and we went. We were in the city in 45 minutes. Never, ever did we fly like we flew that night. It was like God wanted Gil to be there, and he was so happy. Oh my God. But don't ask me what opera we saw that night. Never did the orchestra play better or the singers sing better. They were singing for opera lovers. And they were singing about two doomed lovers. But don't they always wind up singing about doomed lovers, no matter what the opera is? It was the beginning of his second act. The first act was the first 49 years. The second act, which we were not sure would ever happen, actually began that night. And that second act lasted from the age of 49 to the age of 65, when he did die of a second fatal heart attack. Quickly and rather painlessly, actually. Then it was my pain after that.
That story was produced by Andrea Salenzi, along with help from her grandmother, Phyllis, for the 2010 Third Coast Short Docs Challenge. She also featured the story on her radio show, Why Oh Why, which you can find as a podcast at whyohyradio.com. And that's Why spelled W-H-Y. What I can't shake about goodbyes is that usually I'm so fixated on the pain and the new void that's been created by the exit of a person that I forget goodbyes are prime sites for hellos. Not that people magically start flooding into your life at the moment someone leaves, but in the wake of a loss, a hello can sometimes ring like a bell. But most of the time, whether it's after a breakup or the death of someone I love, I feel like the last thing on earth that I want to do is to get to know someone new. It's a risk, you know? Putting in the time and the energy and the vulnerability that it takes to open up about who you are to a stranger and get to know the life stories and points of view of a new person in return, it seems so formidable. It's scary and exhausting to consider when a goodbye is so fresh. Our final piece today connects our relationships to loss with our capabilities and fears of meeting someone new. And it's all with a soundtrack of a foghorn off the Newfoundland coast. I promise, though it may sound nutty, it's ingenious, and it's a beautiful piece of audio storytelling. From independent radio producer Annie McCune, this is Here I Am and here be danger.
Foghorns are interesting things, really, in phenomena, in that they aren't saying, come here. They're saying, I care about you, and go away.
Now watch this young woman who met her true love.
You're going to crash upon the rocks. You're going in on shoals. You're going somewhere where you're likely to fall into harm.
Like, on the subject of love, I'm just sick of thinking about it. Doesn't make any sense to me. And, yeah, I just really don't want to talk about it. Like, really, really don't want to talk about it. Just the idea of two people being in love. I don't know. Maybe it's just not meant for everyone.
When I was in my early 20s, I thought if two people loved each other, that was all you needed in life. But you can love each other, and it can be not good and not right and not working and just not possible.
Now, once there was a young woman who met her true love, and he loved her as much as she loved him. But it happened that he was a fisherman, and he was lost at sea, and she was heartbroken.
He was my first kiss, my first lover, my first everything.
Foghorn noises are low-frequency noises. And so you get that low moan, and you can feel that shiver if you're close enough to it. Your body picks up those vibrations, right? So it's not only a hearing, you know, it can be a feeling kind of situation as well.
The fact that we worked together and that he was in a relationship, just I didn't admit to myself that maybe I actually did have feelings for him. And then I found out that he was separating. He was leaving his relationship. And that was the first time that I knew, oh my God, I want to be with him. I very much want to be with him. And I told him. There was a gathering at his house, and he was busy. He was preparing the food. He was hosting people, getting people's drinks. And I was cutting myself short, saying, you know, I know you're busy. Like, I realize that you have all these things to tend to. And he just said, I have all the time in the world. There were a few months of a kind of, okay, maybe we're going to be together. Maybe these feelings are actually going to amount to a kind of romantic relationship. But it was never straightforward. It was always, maybe this is not a good idea. Maybe this is not a good time.
When the foghorn sounds, it's in a time when you're of limited visibility, and it is a situation where you're heading into danger.
Then he sends me a message saying that he's going to try to return to his family and try to make things work, and that he was sorry he couldn't have been stronger.
Right, and so there you are groping. And you're in this darkness, and this thing is pushing you away. And it's doing it in a funny kind of way, because it says, I want you to be safe, so leave me alone. Go away from me.
I don't even know how I reacted at the time. I may be a bit in disbelief.
It is saying, here I am, and here be danger for you.
Sometimes I wish I could just have grown up in some tiny little friggin' town, and you date the only girl that's in town that isn't your cousin, and it just works out because you're too busy doing work to worry about how their friggin' love life is going. You know what I mean? Sometimes I wish it was a little simpler like that.
To me, it's so simple. You want to spend all your time with someone. You want to talk to someone. You talk to someone, they understand you more than anyone else. You be with them.
Why does love have to make you feel like shit all the time? Sick of being bullied by it. And you gotta be tough, and I'm not tough with matters like this, that's for sure. So that's why I'm just not really gonna give it up for love at the moment, because sometimes it seems like a lot more friggin' trouble than it's worth.
You're out there in a storm-tossed night. You know, if the wind was blowing on shore and you were in a sailing boat, boy, you didn't have a heck of a lot of ability to stay away from those shoals and the likes.
I would wake up furious, like for months. I would just wake up absolutely enraged. Sometimes I would just wake up and throw my alarm clock across the room.
People are like that, right? I'm bad news for you, you know, get away. Don't come near this. I'm only going to mess up your life.
And then got to a point where I didn't think about him every day. It kind of just became quiet or numb.
For me, at least, like a life without, at least a good try at some true love, and not true love with one person for a sustained period of time, not some kooky shit where you find true love with a whole bunch of different soulmates and energies, and that's someone else can do that, but the type of true love I'm talking about, a life without that in it, or at least a good shot at it, I think to me would feel like a wasted life.
I remembered a night off of St. Pierre. And we were on a schooner, an open deck schooner. And the only two people on watch were myself and somebody else. You're out there in a dead fog, you know, calm, can't move because there's no wind in your sails. And then you end up with the blackness and just the sound, right? Just boom. But a whale came up and sat beside us for a couple of hours, just blowing. You know, just sat with us and we bobbed and held position, just waiting for morning to come and some light so we could see how to get ourselves into St. Pierre. And you can't see literally a hand in front of your face.
Time has to pass. That's all. That's all. Who am I by myself? Don't know. Can't remember. It's been a long time, so I've been sort of floating around.
Like a reason to get up in the morning, a reason to have lived your life to say that you've been here. That's what it's all about.
All you could do was just sit there for hour after hour and just listen to the whale blowing.
Even if it's a kind of absurd thing to do to so many years later, to say, you know, for the first time, I have a sense of freedom in my feelings for him. I was always in conflict with them. Like, I can't actually have feelings for him because we're not together. It's just, I do. I can't control who I love. He just felt like this person that I had to somehow exorcise, like a demon. And now I feel like I can just love him. I can love him where he is. I can love him and be with someone else.
Now, what's with the young woman?
I'm just going to live with that feeling. And I think that that's a feeling that there's life in.
That piece was produced by Annie McCune, and it earned her the Best New Artist Award at the 2014 Third Coast Richard H. Dryhouse Foundation competition. Annie tells her story of conceptualizing and producing this piece on transom.org. I recommend checking it out. I've added a link to that interview on our website at kalw.org.
I get along without you very well. Of course I do, except when soft rains fall and drip from leaves, then I recall the thrill of being sheltered in your arms. Of course I do.
Goodbyes are heartbreaking, and hellos can be pretty scary. But as I see it, they're entwined. Goodbyes need hellos first, and usually vice versa. But so many times in our own stories, we focus on only one or the other. Maybe we should start considering goodbyes and hellos together more often. This episode of The Spot is actually the first of a 2-episode arc, a special end-of-year treat for our kind listeners. Today, we took a listen to goodbyes. And next week, we'll hear stories of hellos. But you and I already know that even in stories of hellos, you'll probably find plenty of goodbyes too. In the meantime, you can find this episode and more at kalw.org. And I'd love to hear about the podcasts and radio stories you love. Send them in an email to thespot@kalw.org. And tune in next Thursday, at the same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on KALW San Francisco.
Should I fall
goodbye.
Once more, no, it's best that I stick to